Brewer will snap it. Spotted at the 24, an attempt for 34 yards is up, and it is over in Cleveland. Brandon McManus, from 34 yards out, has given the Broncos a hard-fought 26-23 victory in overtime.
Well, Matt Douglas, there you have it.
Yeah. That's about all you can say at that, isn't it?
You know, the Browns had a lot of opportunities, but it just didn't happen. So let's get the latest from Scott Petrick from the Chronicle-Telegram. Good morning, Scott. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, guys. How are you?
All right. As always on a Monday morning, again, the headline in today's Chronicle-Telegram says it all. And now, the stumble. Browns have undefeated Broncos on the ropes, but can't put them away. Now, I think going into the game, not a whole lot of people thought the Browns would win, but they certainly had their chances.
Oh, yeah, they certainly did. You know, Denver's undefeated, and they had the number one ranked defense, so you knew it was going to be a tough climb for the Browns. You know, what's troubling or disappointing, frustrating, is that they were in position to win the game multiple times, and they just couldn't make that one play to get him over the hump. You know, Peyton Manning did not play well for most of the game and gave the Browns enough chances, and they just couldn't take advantage. You know, Josh McCown threw the bad interception at the end of regulation, but he's trying to throw it out of bounds, cost him a chance to kick a field goal. And then they got that Barkevious Mingo interception to start overtime. You know, they're like 8 or 9 yards away from kicking the winning field goal, or at least trying, you know, what would have been the winning field goal, and they go backward and lose yardage on three straight plays. You know, all they need to do is one play, and they'd be back to 3-3, have two straight overtime wins against, you know, rivals. The mindset just would be totally different, but they couldn't get it done.
Scott, now obviously the Browns won last week against the Ravens with an overtime field goal, but this is the third or fourth time the Browns have played in a close game, offsides on field goal attempts, interceptions on last-second drives, and then, of course, this ending with the sack and going out of field goal range here. The Browns this year, should we be excited that maybe they're getting close to these teams in the NFL, or is this a team that can't finish?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I really do. You know, the expectations for this team were not high before the season started. You know, I think people thought they'd win 4, 5, 6 games. And I don't think people thought they'd beat Denver or win at Baltimore or win at San Diego. You know, they lost on the last-second field goal there, which, you know, actually they probably should have gone to overtime because it was a bad call on the offside penalty. So I think you could take some solace in that they're playing better than outsiders thought they would, I think particularly on offense. But as Mike Patton will tell you, you know, it's a results league, and the fact is they're 2-4. Their defense continues to struggle, can't stop the run, usually gives up big drives late. So there's stuff that needs to be corrected, and, you know how it is. It's just frustrating when all of a sudden, you know, you get to January or, you know, right now or in October, and you go, okay, if this would have happened, if this would have happened, if this would have happened, you'd be 4-2, and it would just feel completely different. And at some point, this organization needs to get over that hump and get over that hump consistently, and that's exactly what the locker room was talking about. You know, Paul Kruger said it would have been a season changer to win back-to-back games if they had closed it out. And instead, it's like almost back to the drawing board.
Scott, since they did not close it out, and the record is 2-4, 2-4 is kind of hard to deal with. Is this going to be a tough game for the players to swallow?
Well, it is. You know, that'll be a storyline this week. You know, there's a lot of close games in the NFL, so it's not like players aren't used to coming back from close losses. You know, and Josh McCown said it right after the game. You know, we did the same thing in San Diego. We lost a heartbreaker in San Diego. We rallied, went to Baltimore, and won. So they can pull from that experience to gather themselves and go to St. Louis on Sunday. But it's difficult, especially when you feel like you keep getting beat down. you know. But I think it's up to the coaching staff and the players to pull the positives, to try to rally themselves. And the fact is, if they go to St. Louis and win, and they come home and beat Arizona, they're 4-4. And at 4-4, you're right in the thick of everything. Nobody's running. The Bengals are running away with the AFC North, but I don't think anybody's going to run away with the wild card spots. And that's how you have to think. You know, until you get to 7 or 8 losses and are mathematically eliminated, you have to think, okay, what do we need to do to the playoffs? If you get to 4-4, you're right back in things. You know, the late end of the schedule, there's a lot of home games. So I think that's how they have to view it, but it's going to be up to Mike Pettine to make sure these guys keep their chins up, because you can't let the season get away from you. And that's happened here too many times, where the close losses turn into big losses, and then the season goes down the drain.
Scott, there's no doubt the Broncos' defense is one of the best in the NFL this year, but the offensive line for the Browns was supposed to be one of the anchors of this team. Yesterday, 4 sacks on McGown. Is that partially the offensive line? Is he holding on to the ball too long? What's going on there?
I think that's a tough situation for that line, because that's what Denver does best, is they get to the quarterback, especially when they know you're going to throw. And that's what Mike Pettine pointed to in that overtime drive that went backward. They lost 3 yards on a first down run. So then you have to throw the ball. Denver pins its ears back. And, you know, the other part of it is Denver has good secondary. Mm-hmm. So it's not like guys are running free. And McCown only has so many choices. He's looking, nobody's open. What do? You throw the ball away, you try to scramble, you take a sack. I mean, and, you know, those are kind of the alternatives, is nobody's open. So I thought the line played well in stretches, and when they moved the ball, the line played really well. It was a stretch where I thought to myself, you know what, they're doing a good job protecting McCown, but then in some crucial situations, they weren't able to do it. You know, the strip sack, somebody blew a protection, and the guy came free. Josh didn't see him and got lit up. The ball comes loose. That led to a field goal. On the late interception in regulation, you know, the guy's hanging on to Josh and hits him as he's trying to throw the ball out of bounds, and it doesn't get out of bounds. So there were breakdowns, but those were to be expected against this pass rush. The problem was McCown kind of turned those breakdowns into huge mistakes, and you can't have your quarterback do that. If he takes a sack without fumbling, if he takes a sack without throwing an interception, maybe this is a different outcome instead of the huge turnovers. You know, he had the pick six, led to obviously a touchdown for Denver. So Mike Pettine knew that they would have pressure and take sacks, but Josh kind of compounded those mistakes, and that's what wound up being the difference in the game.
Scott Petrick of the Chronicle-Telegram is our guest today. And, Scott, it was a week ago that Johnny Manziel got in a little bit of a dust-up, and you wrote this past weekend that you actually had sort of an encounter with him a couple days earlier. For people who may not be aware of that, can you tell us what that was?
Yeah, well, here's the timeline. On Monday, and it's tough to, you know, I've been struggling with how to kind of categorize it, but I think it was more than a dust-up. He passes a woman on the berm, according to her, flies by her on 90 in Avon, gets off the highway at Nagel, and he's fighting with his girlfriend. She's trying to get out of the car. He's trying to keep her in the car. This is what it sounds like, according to the police report. They wind up pulling off the road. The police show up. You know, she claims that he pushed her head against the window and hit her a couple times, but the police say that she's intoxicated. They say that Johnny admitted having a couple drinks, but wasn't intoxicated at the time. And this is 6 o'clock at night. No charges. The couple leaves together. We don't find out about that till Friday, but it happens Monday. And Thursday night, I'm leaving the Browns facility at the same time as Johnny. I got my wife and daughter and her friend in the car, and I just got a first-hand view of Johnny being a reckless driver, weaving in and out, cutting me off, you know, and I'm watching, he's speeding. And to me, you know, that's not unusual for a football player, and it's not unusual for a 22-year-old football player. To me, coming 3 days after an incident where he talked to police and was questioned by police, that just showed me that Johnny doesn't learn from his mistakes. And he just doesn't get it. And then I watched him at practice last week, not knowing what had happened Monday. And he's being silly at practice, and he's running around kind of like a goofball. And I would just like to see any of these events that Johnny goes through have an impact on him. And I've yet to see that. I've yet to see him really change. We saw signs of it. We thought coming out of, you know, his 10 weeks in rehab, and coaches and teammates said that he had changed, and you saw a little bit of it. But I'm not sure any of those stick or have stuck. And I just found it disturbing that 3 days after police questioned you, after somebody called 911 because you're driving like a maniac, in my opinion, he was driving reckless again right in front of my eyes, and I thought that was worth writing about.
One final word. Were you surprised he was active yesterday and Austin Davis, who signed a, you know, two-year multimillion-dollar contract, was not?
Well, I wasn't after the Browns said Friday that his status hadn't changed, but I thought it was newsworthy that he was active and the backup quarterback. You know, I mean, McCown, we knew this. We just talked about the pass rush. There was a good chance McCown was going to get hurt in this game and that Johnny would have to play because Josh was going to get hit. And the fact that the Browns didn't punish him, at least to this point, I think it's significant. And Mike Pettine's going to get asked about it a bunch today. You know, I don't know how different Manziel's circumstances is to what offensive line coach Andy Moeller went through a month and a half ago. The Browns immediately suspended him indefinitely, and then they parted ways. And I guess that's what Mike Pettine's going to have to explain to us. Why did Andy Moeller get suspended right away, and why did Johnny suit up on Sunday?
And the beat goes on. Scott, Patrick, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it. Check him out, ChronicleT.com, and also in the Chronicle Telegram. Scott, thank you.
Thanks, guys.